Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
This is your morning mayhem. It's 101.9 Hi FM. So I've been battling a little bit because I've been trying to understand what the impact is of the Zondo Commission. I know it's important, and we've discussed it. We've even debated it many times. The money spent, is it just depressing to hear this? Is it better if we didn't and we just got on with fixing the corruption and moving forward? But we know that we can't really do that unless we're exposed. So I kind of accept that, and I get it. The question I really have is, what are the ramifications? What legal standing does the commission have? What can be used in evidence? Where does it go to from here? And we've asked Daniel Eloff, who's a legal practitioner at Spice, to join us to try and figure this out, or to help us understand exactly what this commission means. Daniel, very good morning to you, and thank you for taking the time to speak to us.
Good morning. It's lovely to be here again.
So take us through an understanding, or give us an understanding of the weight of the evidence that is heard at the commission.
So it's a quite interesting question. I think a lot of people are aware of the fact that when it comes to criminal proceedings, you have a right not to incriminate yourself. The Zondo Commission, or the Commission into State Capture, or the Inquiry into State Capture, functions a tad differently when compared to our criminal courts. The main purpose of the Zondo Commission is to get to the bottom of all the allegations that have been floating around during the past almost a decade now of a vast amounts of corruption related to certain key figures within government and within the business sector. Initially, when the Zondo Commission started, there was a provision that any testimony provided during the commission would not be able to be used in any criminal proceedings. But there were threats of court cases of various civil rights organizations. Eventually, they took away the provision saying that the testimony can't be used by the National Prosecuting Authority later on.
So does everything have to then start again?
Yes. So they can't use this testimony and say, well, therefore we're going to convict you. So for example, how it would practically play out is a person would be at the Zondo Commission now. They would have provided testimony during the past 2 years. And then should the MPA then, on the strength of that evidence or that testimony, decide to prosecute, then they'll have to go through the normal process of bringing charges, compiling a docket, and then actually going to criminal court.
Right. And should something happen to the witness, for example, an egregie, between the time of giving evidence and going to court, is that does that testimony have to be completely discarded?
So if it's a strange situation, because it could be that that's the only testimony that or evidence that we're able to use, and the courts will then follow what we refer to in the law as the best evidence rule. So the court would say, well, given the fact that we are unable to call the witness to come to court to testify in person, this is the best evidence that we have. But that obviously affects the weight that the court might give to the evidence, because it was given in a particular setting and certain circumstances, and potentially quite a number of years earlier.
Right. Is there full cross investigation during the commission? In other words, if a Jacob Zuma had to appear, could he bring? I mean, obviously his attorney would be present, but what kind of role does the attorney actually play?
So they're basically leading questions. It's not similar to a criminal court where you have a prosecutor and you have your defense counsel and they go up against each other. The purpose of the inquiry is a fact-finding. It's fact-finding orientated. They try to find out what are the true circumstances and what's the extent of the alleged corruption. So they do get an opportunity to cross-examine witnesses. So, for example, if a witness comes and they testify incriminating things against a person, then you can apply for the commission to have the opportunity to cross-examine. But the commission's not mandated to give you that opportunity because it's not a criminal case, because they're not going to prosecute you through this commission. They're not obligated to give you the opportunity to cross-examine someone that might have incriminated you.
So to some extent, somebody is a little bit more vulnerable during a commission of inquiry like this than they might be in a court of law where they could present evidence to the contrary.
Yeah, so obviously you still have your right, because it's a constitutional right, to not give evidence that might incriminate you.
Right, I want to get to that in a moment.
But on the other hand, what we have to keep in mind is that there's scope and room, because it's a fact-finding mission, for you to say something that might have a big or adverse consequence. But on the other hand, the risk of being prosecuted is zero, because you're not going to sit in jail because of what you said at the Zonder Commission. So it's sort of a yes and no answer to your question.
Right. Let's just talk about the right that a person who is testifying before the commission has. We were a bit confused when Dudu Yemeni refused to answer things. We weren't clear whether she was allowed to do that, not allowed to do it. Take us through that aspect of it.
So, to a certain extent, the Zondo Commission is also regulated by our president, our legal president, broadly speaking. Obviously, the commission itself has terms of reference, and they abide by those rules that were agreed upon beforehand. But certain legal legal rules do still count during the commission. So, for example, when Ms. Mayeni testified and she refused to answer a number of questions, the commission is able to make an adverse inference from the fact that she refuses to answer certain questions. It's tried law in South Africa that the court may make that adverse inference. But on the other hand, she has the right not to say anything that she believes will incriminate herself. It's her decision to say what she wants to say or what she does not want to say in the end. But again, it does not reflect positively on her that she's unwilling to, you know, give the whole truth during a commission where she doesn't face the fear or the potential consequence of being prosecuted and sitting in jail eventually.
So what can they do? Jacob Zuma is there, and he is asked a question. What should he be answering in order to protect himself?
Well, and that's up to his legal team in the end to decide what he has to say and doesn't want to say. And again, it comes down to what are you trying to defend? I mean, obviously, if it's like his legal representatives have been maintaining, that he's innocent and he's done nothing wrong, then I think he should testify. I mean, what a better opportunity and a better forum to come to prove your innocence are innocent as you ardently say you are. But in the end, what the exact particulars of what he has to say and what he wants to say is up to his legal team to decide, because we obviously don't know the exact extent of his involvement and the alleged corruption against him. So it's sort of a strategic decision that they need to make. My impression that I get is they don't want to testify at all because they don't want to play their cards too early. I think they'd rather be in the setting of a criminal court where the burden of proof of the state is considerably higher than the burden of proof that we have with the commission.
I do hear that. I think that it might make sense. And the fact that he is the ex-president of the country and he should be doing this is and there's a moral and ethical duty aside, from a purely legal criminal perspective, that's probably sound advice.
Yes, definitely. And we need to keep in mind that not these particular allegations, but corruption allegations against Mr. Zuma stem from years ago. I mean, you can trace it all the way back to the arms deal in the late 1990s. He's had previous corruption cases against him. I mean, we all are aware of the drama surrounding his election, as ANC president and the charges that were dropped against him and brought back against him and then subsequently dropped again. So it forms part of his broader legal strategy that has been playing out in front of our eyes for the past nearly two decades.
In fact, I have a quote here. In 2018, he said, "I have done nothing wrong. No one has told me what I have done wrong. No one has been able to furnish what I have done. If I've done something wrong, there are processes. I find it very unfair to me that this issue must be raised all the time." So there you have it. Apparently, he has, according to him, done nothing wrong, and no one's even telling him what he's done wrong, which is so unfair, really, yeah, if one thinks about it.
Yes. Yes. I mean, the point is he has clever lawyers. I know Mr. Zuma's attorneys, and they're a respectable law firm, and they're obviously going to use every single possible trick in the book to ensure that due process is followed. And unfortunately, if you're a believer in the rule of law and equality before the law, you have to give him this opportunity to play out all the possible avenues that he's able to use.
Right. But for the fact that surely his attorneys aren't saying to him, don't go before the commission now that there is a court ruling demanding that you do so, and you know that you could land up in prison for contempt of court, surely.
Yes. Well, I have to say, so it's an interesting question. So I personally believe, I don't think they have a sound argument that they're making at the moment. They released a letter, I think yesterday or the day before, saying, well, the reason they're not willing to testify before the commission, despite the constitutional court ruling Mr. Zuma should, is that there's still a review process regarding.
Oh, Daniel. Daniel, are you back with us?
I am indeed. Sorry.
No problem. All right. So you were saying their defense is that there's still a review process. You don't agree with it, and that's where we lost you.
Yes. So, I mean, they're taking every technical argument they possibly could take. They're basically saying they took the decision by Mr. Zondu not to recuse himself as presiding officer on review, and that review decision hasn't been decided on yet. And basically the argument is they won't be appearing before the commission until that review has been finalized. Now, I think it doesn't hold water in the sense that you have a constitutional court order directing him to appear before the commission regardless. And obviously the constitutional court was cognizant of the fact that there was a pending review and still ordered him to be there. But that's unfortunately how it goes, and that's the lawyers just doing the jobs that they obviously pay to do.
Right. But in all likelihood, what do you think will be happening through this over the next couple of weeks now?
I think, to be honest, and I might be shooting myself in the foot as an attorney myself, but this is one of those instances where it's going to become a political, well, it's already a political question, but it's going to be determined by politics. Whether or not Mr. Zuma actually testifies before the commission is, I think, solely going to depend on what the ANC decides to do. They're the only body, and basically when I say body, I just refer to the NEC, the top six of the ANC. They will be the ones deciding whether or not they're going to compel Mr. Zuma to testify or not. But what I can tell you is, if they refuse to do it, it really is a grave situation to be in. The thing with the rule of law and equality before the law is it's not there for, you know, the average person who's trying to avoid justice and accountability. It's there precisely for these moments when you have powerful people who need to be accounted for. And they refuse to do it. That's when, you know, the test really comes in for the rule of law. And if the ANC refuses to compel Mr. Zuma to appear before the commission, it really does spell a dark time for our rule of law and for our constitutional democracy in general. I know it sounds very doom and gloom, but
I don't disagree with you.
It's the unfortunate reality, and we we have to ensure that everyone's equal before the law and everyone's afforded the same opportunity to defend themselves against charges. And we really just hope the same happens here.
And of course, this is all about balance of power, separations of power. Esma Khashula says, what has Zuma done now? Just leave Comrade Zuma alone. President Zuma is a South African. He has his own rights. And of course, we're not arguing whether he's South African and whether he has his own rights. Of course, we know that. We didn't need Esma Khashula to tell us that. But it does signal an important approach to Jacob Zuma. Ramaphosa saying, let's give him some time and space. Daniel, I'm not a legal expert. You are. Is time and space a valid legal defense in this case?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly not. I made a tongue-in-the-cheek tweet earlier this week where I said, this is true privilege. When you talk about privilege, how more privileged can you be that you're able to decide whether or not you want to have the Constitutional Court ruling? And unfortunately, that's what power, political power and money does to a certain extent. It, when you have both those things, you're able to just say whether or not you're going to adhere to our rule of law, or you're just going to flaunt it in any case.
Absolutely. That's where we leave it. Fascinating conversation. Very, very helpful. Certainly for me, and I'm sure for our listeners as well, as we try and figure this out. Legal practitioner at Hertus Spies, it's Daniel Eloff speaking to us around the rights in terms of the commission.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.